I'm going to move quickly over to the Schedule L because otherwise I can't meet my time marks here. The Schedule L, this slide is doing nothing more than saying, look, there's four different parts. One's on tax sinning for code section 4958. The other three are sunlight is the best antiseptic, quote from Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. And so I want folks to understand that we have to be friendly with Schedule L parts 2 through 4, because that's the entree for saying that the filer knows how to manage insider transactions. So if you have no insider transactions, no one's going to ask, were they well managed? When you have them, were they well managed? And the answer to that question should be coming from not the person who's the subject of the insider transaction, which means that we have to have decent conflict of interest policies. I was very excited when both this master class and the first master class said there's no point in having conflict of interest policies if you don't follow them. Okay, so there's a question on the 990 over in the O part of the Jell-O shot on the governance portion of the 990 that asked, do you have a written conflict of interest policy? Everybody says yes, and then they have to proceed after 12A to do 12B and 12C. So 12C is an area where Jim Sheehan is going to look to see what the answer is when there are insider transactions. And people often do not give a decent answer because the answer isn't yes to 12C. Well, it is, because nobody wants to say no. We don't regularly and consistently monitor enforcement with the policy. The face of the form says, describe in Schedule O how you did that. But the instructions say, tell us about the policy. Can you recite your policy? Who is covered under it? What happens if there's a conflict? So Schedule O disclosures are extremely important. And in my handout materials, I've walked through six of the key, seven key questions, what I call the predominant six, and given suggested narratives, talked about how to apply the instructions. But I just want to note the overlap here between Schedule L and conflict of interest management. Then to add insult to injury, I want you to know why so many CFO types may have not been properly reporting some of their insider transactions. And the answer to that is, from 2014 through 2018, the Form 990, the year on those forms, failed to update the trigger question to Schedule L's parts 2, 3, and 4, the three parts I'm harping on, but most importantly, the business transaction one, by not adding that we picked up creator founders and substantial contributors. So for 5 years, trigger question 28 was not accurately stating 35% controlled entities. So I had people who were reviewing their forms and saying, well, I understand my answer to 28 is valid, except it's antiquated and out of date. So I've given you what is the correct form. But notice that that's the form that many people are now filing, 2019 and the soon-to-be-utilized 2020 form. One of the two handouts I have gives way more information about Schedule L's parts 2 through 4 from a perspective of not just being friendly with it, but how to deal with the public relations issues. And certainly in our scenarios that were presented in the masterclass, you know, Shelley more than once and spoke to the required reporting that may not be appealing when you have to say that you've been doing things. But think about putting your best foot forward. I will say on this one slide that interested person exclusions, for those of you who are not aware of this, all C3 organizations are categorically not interested persons. We don't have to report grants to C3s or them as creators or founders. Similarly, or business transactions with them. Similarly, if you're a C4, 5, 6, and continue that numbering, you don't have as an interested person another C4, 5, 6, et cetera. I don't want to spend time on excess benefit transactions other than highlighting that the disclosure when one of them happens is you must name names. Okay, so the who, when, what is an excess benefit transaction? The masterclass did a nice job of just, you know, of summarizing the information I had on the slide. The italicized text on the slide points out that filers are always better off having the EBT, as we refer to these, having been disclosed on the 990 prior to the IRS or the state coming in. I mean, you're always better off for doing that unappealing required narration, and then think through, you know, what your public relation needs here are going to be. Either the organization was wronged in the example that we just had in the masterclass, comp was going to be 3.5 million. Let's assume you somehow quantified that through a decent process as being reasonable. But now that person took a year off and continued to get that pay. Well, that wasn't reasonable. There wasn't services being provided back, you know. And so explaining whether or not you were done wrong in the hope that the IRS is going to do their job and then impose the excise tax on that individual so you get correction, or that there was some slop factor on your side through an action or error that allowed there to be an uneven exchange, you know, this is what you're going to be writing in the blank lines of Schedule L to try and start to use some honey to have those who you are accountable to, you know, think better. Earlier today, there was a presentation when there was a difference of opinion between the presenters. This was in the first masterclass on fiduciary duty about what causes embezzlement.